Welcome to Opening Stage VGH, the video game history podcast for everyone. I'm your host, Dean Beaver, and I'm once again joined by my lovely wife, Meredith.
Hello.
As usual, we have a special guest, our second returning guest in our return series. Not that this was a planned series, but I have been writing some episodes and I've wanted this guy's specific viewpoint on this one. Our good friend, Justin Verstrait. Justin, thank you so much for joining us again.
I am honored to be a repeat guest. I am a listener and proud talker of this on this podcast.
Great. So as we have all of our guests introduce themselves, please give us your life story in a tweet.
I'm Justin, and I'm going to read the exact same tweet if you didn't listen to the Waterworld episode.
Which you should.
Good. Yes, exactly.
Available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Google Podcasts.
Yeah, you should go back.
Well, the same place they found this one?
Yeah. I am a live theater professional. I have a big boy job. I am a podcast aficionado, a movie goer extraordinaire, a comedy connoisseur, and a professional wrestling lover.
Great.
Cream rises to the top.
I think I showed that video to Meredith for the first time. For those of you who don't know, get on YouTube. Stop listening to this podcast right now. Get on YouTube and look up Randy Savage, Cream of the Crop. It is this video of Randy Savage. It had to have been the late 80s or early 90s.
Early 90s, baby.
Where he's trying to get the title back, and he just like interrupts Mean Gene Okerlund and just has this stream of consciousness about why he should be the World Wrestling Federation champion. And at the same time, I guess he decided to try his sleight of hand skills because
he went to craft services.
Because he just starts pulling out creamers from every which way. And he already has like giant hands. It's 2 minutes of pure brilliant insanity.
I don't know how he hid that many coffee creamers in his hand and was able to.
Because he has hands the size of garbage can lids.
The cream will rise to the top. Dang it.
I still like that video game thing where they replaced the dragon's voice with his voice.
Oh yeah, the Skyrim mod that features, instead of dragons, Randy the Macho Man Savage. So it's like, wait, did you hear that?
You don't know where the Macho Man is coming from.
It's just a legend.
Yeah!
Justin, not only are you a big fan of professional wrestling, but you are also a very gifted fight choreographer for live theater.
Thank you. That's nice of you.
Meredith, you are a very gifted martial artist. Give us a quick history of that.
I wish that I had been told that it would be homework.
It doesn't need to be fast or fancy.
I actively trained in martial arts ferociously for about a decade in Chicago, and eventually made teaching fitness my career because of my martial arts background. I have fought competitively locally in Chicago in the Golden Gloves, and nationally and internationally in Savat, Boxe Francais, which is French kickboxing. And I actually fought in Disney World once, which was pretty rad, in a bunch of different fights.
That's not where you kicked the Canadian girl in the throat, was it?
No, that was in France.
Okay.
She was pissing me off. she was a bee. Yeah, so I guess that's it. Do I need to talk about like what I trained in and stuff?
No, I think what I wanted to establish is that I consider both of you to be experts in intentional competitive movement.
Okay.
Okay.
So that being said, we'll dive right in. Daigo the Beast Umehara was born on May 19th, 1981. He began going to arcades at age 10. As Street Fighter II usually had a longer line than other games, Daigo opted instead to play Fatal Fury, the King of Fighters. By the time he was 13, Daigo had shifted his main game to Vampire Hunter. That's not super important. I just thought it was cool that there was a fighting game called Vampire Hunter.
Was Buffy in it?
No, I don't think so. I'll have to do some research. Word started getting around about Daigo when he set a 286 match win streak, which ended only when the arcade closed.
Wow.
In 1998, Daigo won a Street Fighter Alpha 3 tournament at the Tokyo Game Show. Tokyo Game Show is basically a video game trade show that happens annually. It's kind of like Japan's answer to E3 here in the United States. Tokyo Game Show, which qualified him to face American player Alex Valle, V-A-L-L-E. I believe he is of Hispanic descent.
I'm just going to pop in here. This is really starting to sound like the movie that we saw, Dean, together, The Plot to Pixels.
Oh, don't remind me.
Starting to sound like it.
No.
We're venturing into Pixels.
This is going to get crazy.
So our main character is from Japan?
Yes. He is a competitive Japanese fighting game player. And we'll get a little deeper into what that means.
Whereas Meredith would kick people, real people.
I do enjoy kicking.
This was Daigo's first overseas tournament and was broadcast as a 50-minute special broadcast in Japan. The match was a best-of-three game, and Daigo came from behind to win 2-1.
All right.
Oh.
Despite never meeting, Daigo reportedly developed a rivalry with American fighting game player Justin Wong. The two finally met in the loser's bracket of 2004's Evolution.
So yep, go ahead. I got to talk about the in spite of never meeting. Was this still in 98?
No, we're in 2004 now.
Okay, so there is internet.
Very early internet.
But early enough so that they could do maybe some smack talk in the chat rooms.
Yeah, the chats.
Oh, yeah. The two finally met in the loser's bracket in 2004's Evolution Championship Series, often shortened to EVO. Playing Street Fighter III, Third Strike. Daigo chose to play as Ken Masters, while Wong chose to play as Chun-Li. Now, I want to take a break from the history part of this before I get into the really crazy stuff and just go over a few things about the basic structure of fighting games. We've talked a little bit about fighting games in the past, but I don't think I've ever actually like mapped it out for somebody like Meredith who's never played a fighting game. So the basic structure is there are two fighters and obviously they're fighting. It's usually a best of three round match. The round ends when one player's life bar reaches zero or the timer runs out, whichever of those happens first.
How long's the timer?
It depends. It's usually something that you can set in the options. Usually it starts at 99, which is a little more than a minute and a half, and it goes down from there. Fighters usually have a number of attacks at their disposal. This includes special moves, which have special properties like I think the most iconic would probably be Ryu and Ken's Hadouken from Street Fighter.
Is that where all the people pose with their hands out? And they make their friends jump away.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's basically throwing a fireball, but when you think about it, it's a way to attack from a distance.
I mean, if you have magic.
Yeah, if you can throw fireballs and can control your chi to that extent. Who can? So
was the sixth degree black belt, which I never made it that far.
Yeah, you didn't quite level up.
Yeah.
No.
You only
levitation was seven or eight.
So you have special moves.
Sorry, and I'm a stage combat professional.
Yeah.
So I can actually make fireballs on the stage.
Yeah.
We could make that happen.
You can, but you would have to sign all bunch of safety things and there'd have to be a person in the curtain with a fire extinguisher.
Very true. But
yeah, I don't think they have those in Street Fighter 2.
No. Anyway.
So you have special moves, which have special properties, and then you have super moves, which are usually a preset string of hits and special moves. These can be like, these are usually, especially nowadays, the more like fancy high-end cinematic moves. Special and super moves usually require specific button input combinations to execute. So for the Hadouken that I was talking about earlier, you have to press down, diagonal, and to the side, and then usually press like a punch button, and that throws out a fireball. And in Street Fighter 2, you can press a different strength of punch to get
what
like
those, that's when you wear that t-shirt, people always yell up, up, down, down to you.
Oh, Contra. That's a cheat code that gives you 30 lives in Contra, which it's I should probably end up doing an episode about that.
So it's not a fighting thing?
No.
Oh, I always assumed it was a fighting thing.
Oh, no. That's just a code that you have like 2 seconds to input that code so that you can get 30 lives. And that game is friggin' impossible.
30 lives is a lot.
Yeah. And I usually need to like start over even when I put in that code. A string of successful hits in close succession is a combo.
Duh.
I'm just saying this so everybody knows.
Okay.
All of this is important for what's
about to happen.
You can
throw a combo, though, and not be successful. So it has to be successful in the game world to be a combo.
Well, a lot of video games, they will like start putting up a counter of how long your combo is. So like...
for points.
Yeah. And
that's
real. Yeah, and there's like a score multiplier and things like that.
Are different strikes worth more points?
It can. It depends. Usually, I know that...
because a kick to the head in real life is worth 4.
One interesting thing to put out is that with the super moves that I'm talking about, those usually come with a preset number of hits. Like if
So like your special thing that you would push the special combo and
yeah.
The person would just fire off those mm-hmm. hits?
Yes.
Okay.
So keep that in mind. We're also going to talk about blocking versus parrying.
Those are real things.
Yeah, I know.
That's exciting to me.
So if somebody's coming at you, you can usually either block or parry. Blocking an attack usually results in you taking damage, although not nearly as much as taking the hit directly.
Uh-huh.
Whereas parrying an attack not only negates the damage, but also temporarily stuns your opponent, which leaves them open for a counterattack. It's usually much harder to pull off the parry. However, it usually requires a specific button combination to be executed in a very small time frame.
That's kind of realistic,
yeah.
Except for the stunning part.
Speaking of time frames, I want to talk about what's specifically called frames. High-level video game players basically measure time in frames of animation, or FPS.
This makes sense to me.
So, yeah, you know how, like, cartoons are basically made up of, like, a series of pictures?
Yes.
They take the same approach when they're calculating out, like, time to do things in video games. Like,
I used to want to be a cartoon, like, Disney person when I was a little kid. And then I found out how many times you have to draw the same thing over and over.
Yeah.
I was like, wait, never mind.
It's the Ben Wyatt in Parks and Rec episode when he gets laid off in the claymation.
Would a depressed person do this?
I've been working for 3 weeks or whatever.
I forgot about that. Oh my God. Oh, that was funny.
High-level video game players measure time in frames of animation, or FPS. Most retro games, including Street Fighter III Third Strike, operate at 60 FPS, or 60 frames of animation per second.
Okay.
So
I can do acronyms.
So what I want you to understand is that one frame is 1/60th of a second.
Yeah, okay, got it.
All right, so take all of that.
Is that a millisecond?
I don't know. A millisecond is 1,000 in 1 second. So it's not quite that bad.
1/60th.
She's checking my work.
Oh, it's 16 milliseconds.
Oh.
Or 17, depending on how you want to do the decimals.
Oh, okay.
You could also refer to it as 60 hertz,
ooh,
meaning 60 times a second.
Gotcha.
So we could do 60 hertz from now on and sound like we know what we're talking about.
Yeah. And then you're also dealing damage, which is you're dealing 16 hertz to
hertz.
So take all of that. Keep it in the back of your mind as I read these next two paragraphs.
Oh, it's there. It's there for permanence now.
I'm ready.
After each player, Daigo and Justin Wong, had won a round.
I forgot about those guys. They're still here. Okay.
After each player, Daigo and Justin Wong, had won a round in match one, Daigo got off to a weak start in the third round. Wong was playing conservatively, slowly chipping away at Daigo's life bar. Eventually, Daigo was down to one unit of health, meaning that any hit, blocked or otherwise, would result in Wong's victory. With 26 seconds left in the match, Wong could either wait out his opponent or hit him once. Wong chose the latter, executing Chun-Li's 14-hit super move.
That's the kicks, the multiple kicks.
Hoyoku Sen, which translates to Fanning Phoenix Wing.
Hell yeah.
Is that where they like levitate and kick?
No, that's the bicycle kick from Mortal Kombat.
Okay.
She stands on like her left leg and her right leg just goes up and up and up and up. Oh,
okay, that's realistic.
Yep.
I'm gonna show you.
Can do that.
Yeah, I'm sure you can.
I haven't tried it in a while.
I'm gonna show you guys a video of this.
Oh, of this actual moment or just this move?
Of this moment.
Okay.
Oh shit. Apologies for the expletive.
We're allowed to say fuck if we want.
Okay. No, this is a clean Christian podcast.
No, the fuck it is.
Daigo knew that any hit would result in his defeat, so he made the split-second decision to parry each of the 14 hits of Wong's attack.
Whoa.
Yeah. That was instant reaction.
Parrying a single attack required the player to perform the right button combination within a 6-frame window, so roughly 1/10 of a second. Daigo successfully parried the entire attack before following up with a 12-hit combo of his own, which he concluded with Ken's super move, Shippu Jinrai Kyaku, which translates to Hurricane Thunderclap Leg.
Whoa! That's what I want to name my right leg.
So I'm gonna show you guys a video of this.
My left leg can be Phoenix, whatever. My right leg can be Hurricane Thunderclap Leg.
So here we go.
Evo moment number 37. What is number
rare
one?
Footage of Daigo actually angry. Just as turtle style.
Wait, which one is which? Daigo's king.
Daigo down.
Yeah.
And the crowd goes wild. Had to be there.
I mean, I am gonna be real. Like, if you hadn't explained all that stuff to me before then, I would have been like, whatever.
Yeah.
I encourage everyone to go watch this video or put this link in the description, Diener.
Yeah, you should put it in the show notes.
That's some bonkers shit.
Yeah. So I wanna talk with you guys just real quick, like freeform, about what I just showed you. And I know that there was a lot leading up to it.
It was worth it.
Yeah, it was.
I've thought enough about video games to know that video games, when you distill it down to its purest form, is basically
zeros and ones.
It's basically hitting a button at the right time.
Right.
That's what a video game is. But to try and take it to like a superhuman level like that just kind of astounds me. And so like I said at the beginning of the episode, I really wanted both of your guys' specific takes on this as people who not only compete or have competed physically, but like know a lot about intentional movement.
So my first thought is that, so you discussed these pre-programmed like special moves and stuff like that, where there's basically like a combo that you just like your person, just like your character or avatar or whatever just goes into if you hit the moves at the right time.
Yeah.
And it seems also like you have to know when these moves would be effective. So it made me think while you were saying that of when you are actually training to fight, A, everyone will have their own moves that they like to do that work for them. I had a friend who had a crazy overhand right. I knew she had an overhand right. Everyone knew she had an overhand right, but you couldn't duck her freaking overhand right. And it landed like a pile of bricks every time. Like, you knew it was coming and it was just really hard to block. So that was like her quote unquote special move. I liked to kick, and my favorite move was a front kick straight to the face at the very beginning of the fight. Oh, again,
you're such like... a badass. You're so badass. Oh my God. Ever since the moment I met you, which we can talk about, the moment I met you, you're such a fucking badass. Continue. Sorry.
Thank you. Anyway,
she says thank you and covers her face. I'm sorry. Oh yeah, I just kick people right in the face at the start of the fucking
that
fight.
Was my favorite. So right on the bell, I just boom to try and throw them off. Anyways, it didn't always work. But so I feel like when you're doing these special moves, like, and also you could train like when I was boxing training, my coach would have us do these fast, like jab, cross hook, you know, upper jab, cross hook, or hook, cross hook, or whatever. And you do like 10 round combos or 10 punch combos, like fast, fast, fast in a row. So that if you ever got to a point in a fight where your arms just would start going into that combo without your brain having to say, blah, blah, blah. I actually injured my right ankle really badly shortly before some test. I don't know if it was my black belt test. It may have been, but I was sparring for something and I had to spar. And everyone was like, well, just don't use that leg. And you get to the point where like your leg just goes, like your head, you will see, your eyes will see the opening and the signal like bypasses conscious thought and just goes straight to your leg and your leg just goes there. Mm-hmm. So it was hard to not kick with that leg, even though it hurt. So it seems like the same kind of thing would happen with your fingers, with these special moves. Like,
definitely,
you do it enough and like your eye sees the opening and your fingers do the move.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the hand-eye coordination is, you know, in Meredith's case, eye foot to face coordination. I'm sorry, I'll never get over much you could kick all of our friends' asses.
Jesus.
And us through the Zoom somehow.
we can talk about the way Dean almost proposed and people talked him out of later as well.
I was one of the people who talked him out of it.
Thank you. Appreciate you.
Moving on. one thing that kind of astounds me. I'm sorry, Justin. Were you going to say anything else?
Oh, it was just I was basically echoing what Meredith said about the hand-eye coordination and just, you just go into, you know, I can't think of the word.
It's almost like when you're doing stage combat and you've learned these moves.
Oh yeah.
Like Justin and I were in a play together with swords and there's a thing called girlfriend speed. Justin, would you like to explain to what girlfriend speed is?
I've actually never heard the term girlfriend.
You haven't? What? Okay.
No.
I've heard that.
Girlfriend speed is when your girlfriend is in the audience and you suddenly like speed the fuck up.
Shit, that's good. Yep, that makes so much sense.
Justin and I were in this scene where we had to play, I think, Spaniards or something, and one of the main characters, our friend Glenn, was the main dude, and he had to basically fight us all off, and Glenn would go girlfriend speed like no one's business. And I remember once Justin and I are in the middle of a scrum and being pushed back on stage, and Justin looks over at me and goes, terrifying. Because Glenn was just going.
And but he's because, a massive man.
Yes.
He's a massive muscular man, and he just maneuvered me.
And like, fortunately, because we had the hand-eye coordination, we were able to like keep up with the moves.
Yeah.
Which is why you train at slow speed, because your muscles will get the muscle memory faster, and then you like take it up to show speed, hopefully never to girlfriend speed.
Oh my God, that's so good.
But yeah. So I feel like it's similar. Like so you get into like that moment like where he was in that in that fight, mm-hmm. where his fingers knew what to do. And even though it was maybe girlfriend speed, he was just like, it's this or I mean, I'm dead anyway.
Yeah. Right. Yep. Yep.
What always astounds me about it is the fact that he chose a character to play as that he is good with. And kind of bouncing off of what Meredith said, each character has their own moveset. In order to play at this high enough level, you have to know not only everything about your character, but pretty much any other character that your opponent might play as. So he, subconsciously or not, knew that, like, this is what you have to do in order to survive this attack.
Yeah, or he studied just like Meredith would study for a fight, or yeah. I would, you know, write down my X's and O's on, you know, on a piece of paper as I'm trying to build something. Yeah.
Yeah. Another thing is kind of a side story. This isn't super related to what we were talking about, but Marvel versus Capcom Infinite came out a little while, and I just kind of like those games because it's kind of impossible for something like that to happen for, like, my favorite Capcom video game characters to go up against, like, Iron Man and, like, the Avengers and the X-Men and that kind of thing.
You want a Pikachu versus Cap kind of situation?
Hey, Nintendo, if you're listening, you're missing money.
I'd watch that movie.
Pikachu was voiced by Ryan Reynolds again,
that'd be awesome.
Gold.
But anyway.
Ryan Reynolds Pikachu against Old Man Cap.
Oh, yeah. No, I don't think I will.
But one thing that was happening is when Marvel versus Capcom was originally made, Marvel was a vastly different company. It was actually on the verge of bankruptcy at the time. Yeah. And so they were given out license to whatever characters they could just to scrape by. And so...
Isn't that funny that Marvel was about to go bankrupt?
Yeah. That's why they sold all the rights to, like, Spider-Man. That's why we're in this MCU mess.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, and all those things.
Well, one of the things...
It's why in Marvel, at least right now, as of November 2021, you know, Marvel can't say the Marvel movies, they can't use the word mutant.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
But anyway, Magneto had always been, like, a staple character in these games. But when Marvel versus Capcom Infinite came out, this was like a year before Endgame and Infinity War came out. So Marvel's now, again, vastly different company than it was when they started making these movies. And they decide, it's largely believed that Disney prohibited Capcom from including the X-Men characters in order to focus on more of the Avengers characters so that it could kind of be like a tie-in promotion. So
that sounds like a thing that they would do.
So they started getting flack because none of the X-Men were going to come back. So you couldn't play as Wolverine. You couldn't play as Gambit. And Magneto could, like, fly in 8 directions across the screen. And, like, there were a lot of people who really wanted that back in the game. And Capcom was getting a lot of flack for it. And one of the guys who was on Capcom's PR team came forward and he was like, you know, when you think about it, these characters are really just a collection of moves. Like, I know a lot of people like Magneto's 8-way air dash, but Captain Marvel is in this game and she can do that too. No disrespect to Captain Marvel, but if I want to play a game where I want to play as friggin' Magneto.
I agree. Yeah. I love me some Magneto.
Is it because he has a penis?
No.
No.
Mm-hmm.
And his helmet looks like...
Yeah, he's like 60 and built.
Yeah.
And he's...
He was, like, a Holocaust survivor too. Come on.
Yeah. And his, like, hands do this, like, cool after image thing. But anyway, this is a really roundabout way of saying that Daigo had to have knowledge not only of himself, but of his opponent as well.
I mean, you would assume that to make it to that level, he would have played as all of the characters at some point. Which, if that was a possibility in real life, would make very interesting fights.
Yeah.
Like, if you could, like, borrow your opponent's brain.
Oh, yeah, that would be great.
like, be inside them for a bit and see what that feels like.
It's Justin, creepy. Justin, like, a quick fantasy I've always had is basically, like, playing a fighting game with you, recording the match, and having you like work that match into a show.
Oh shit, yeah.
That's always been a fantasy of mine.
Oh, that's cool.
Anyway, see,
I told you about we could do fireballs earlier.
Getting back into the story. Primary ring announcer Ben Cureton was tasked with creating a highlight reel of notorious moments from Evo 2004. He uploaded the video under the title Moment 37. Despite it obviously being the crowning achievement of the event, he picked a random number to give the impression that other moments such as this existed and to help create hype for next year's event.
Marketing. That's why it said Moment 37.
Yep.
Okay. All right. Okay. Okay. All right. This is the thing. Yeah. Had I been...
She's pissed now.
Yeah. Like, I'm a little annoyed. If I had been a person who was way into this and I saw Moment 37, I would have immediately looked around on the YouTube for Moment 36 on down, maybe even Moment 40, just to see what was going on. And had I not found any other moments, I would have, not me, but maybe someone would have gone into the comments and been like, where are the other moments? God damn you.
Give me them moments.
Yeah.
So
someone lead me to these moments.
I'm not saying you're wrong.
I would have been pissed and I would have been disenfranchised with the whole thing.
I will politely say that websites such as YouTube were in their infancy during 2004.
Okay, so where is Moment 37 being put up?
I don't know.
Okay.
Exactly.
Right. I don't know.
I don't know where it was originally put up. I know that the video
YouTube was around in 2004. Yeah. I think it was.
I think it was at the point where it wasn't owned by Google yet.
Oh, definitely not.
Yeah.
Because I was senior high school 04 into 05. So,
All right. Freshman. YouTube came out in 2005.
Yeah. Okay. So this is before YouTube.
Just
so
before YouTube.
I would have been a senior in high school, then a freshman in college, right when YouTube started. Because I remember sitting in the dorm watching YouTube.
I do too. Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember putting videos online pre-YouTube though.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you had to embed them, I think. Mm-hmm.
On your GeoCities website.
Did the old HTMLs.
Yeah.
We all went to a website to format our MySpace accounts.
I had a Netscape
accounts.
Website. Thank you very much. That I created a page on.
It should be noted that despite narrowly defeating Wong, Daigo went on to lose in the grand finals against Japan's Kenji KO Obata.
Did he know Kenji beforehand?
I don't know. I didn't
because it seems like, I mean, I know Japan is bigger than I think it is, but compared to Tennessee, it is small.
Despite losing the pivotal match, Wong credits Moment 37 with reviving the fighting game community, which had suffered due to the declining prominence of arcades. Daigo and Wong held a rematch in 2014 to commemorate the 10th anniversary of Moment 37, where Daigo once again parried Wong's Hoyokusen before countering with his Shippujin Raikyaku. However, Wong had enough health remaining to survive the attack and respond, clinching victory.
Wow.
Daigo and Wong continue to play competitively to this day. A downloadable version of Street Fighter 3 Third Strike includes a challenge where players can attempt Daigo's legendary parry for themselves.
Oh, that's awesome.
So that is the story of Moment 37.
He's a legend. And he's a part of the lore of the game.
Oh yeah, they got
so rad.
They got him in there. Ken was revealed as a character for Super Smash Brothers Ultimate, which I'm kind of surprised I'm not in Super Smash Brothers Ultimate yet because like everybody is in that game. But they managed to fit that into the trailer for Ken. Wow. So like people nowadays who develop video games, they know about this kind of stuff.
I mean, it's probably in your little college gaming class that you take when you're becoming a video game developer.
Yeah, there's got to be something like that. Anyway, that's about all the time that we have for today. Justin, I thank you so much for coming back, and I hope this was entertaining enough for you.
Oh, this was awesome. And I before we leave, I do have to mention the first time that I met Meredith.
And it
was during the auditions for that show we were speaking of, Cyrano. And I was the assistant fight choreographer, and the choreographer had us do an exercise called Hunter Hunted, in which we had a set of moves to do, which the auditionees or whatever auditioners.
There was obstacle course.
Yeah, there was an obstacle course, and then they had to do Hunter Hunted with me, which is like there's a spot in the middle of the floor, and we have to circle. You know, one person is the hunter, and they move, and the hunted has to move and keep that at the same distance, equidistant from the other person.
Yeah.
So I'd been doing this all day.
You know, I remember it was like at the end of the day, and you guys were like, do you guys need to see it again? And everyone I was auditioning with was like, yes, please. And Matt was like, one more, Justin, one more.
But so I look at Meredith, and I didn't know her name yet, but I noticed her shirt, and she was wearing her Golden Gloves boxing championship shirt. And I was wondering if that was legit, which I now know is legit. And then she dropped down into stance and put her sword up. And my brain went, holy shit. And then we started the moves, and it scared me so much that I gave her an award for it.
Right.
3/4 of the way through the run, there was an award giving every night, and I gave her a reward for scaring the fucking hell out of me.
That's so funny.
Yeah,
yes,
as soon as she dropped down into her athletic stance, I mean, that's probably when you would have kicked me straight in the face, you know, because had we not had swords.
Yeah.
Because my eyes widened and I paused, and I had that millisecond of, oh no.
There was a show once, Brood, that we were just talking about, Justin.
I love that show.
Where I was fight captain for that show, and the fights were way realistic. They were great fights.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember Dana Black and I had a big knockdown drag out like fight scene with like just hand-to-hand combat. And I remember thinking this in our fight call. Like, she had this straight jab to my face that I would parry. And I parried it every night, but she was
every jabbing. Night. You only have 6 frames of animation to be able to do that.
Okay. but she was jabbing at my face and not at the parrot on my shoulder every time.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking in fight call, if I ever miss the parry, she's going to punch me in the face. Now, a good fight captain would have been like, you know what, Dana, aim over here. You know, but I said in my head, I'll just parry it every time.
Because I'm that badass.
So one night I missed the parry, as you would, doing it a billion times. And she punched me in the face, and time froze. Because like, I don't think for the audience, because I had friends in the audience who were like, I wondered if she'd actually connected, but then you guys were not. So, but on stage, there's the other people on stage who are going, woo, and like yelling and catcalling and like whatever. Everyone froze at that moment. And I was told that my eyes changed. They're like, you got hit in the face and you went from like acting to I'm going to kill you. And we just, in my head, I was like, well, keep going. But Dana said, she was like, yep, take me down. Just take me down. Because I did take her down later in the fight. It was funny. But I had a little bruise. Like,
oh, yeah, I remember that.
Right on my lip, because it was right before my birthday. Like, literally the night before my birthday. And, like, I had this big bruise on my lip underneath. That it was funny, because they were all... Everyone who was on stage was like, yeah, your face totally changed. It was scary.
Metamorph, I don't know.
Justin, I'm just remembering this now, and I'm wrestling myself. It might have been Cyrano that I auditioned for as well.
Yes, you did.
Did you really?
I did, yeah. Because I'm just now remembering this. I went through the obstacle course leading up to the Hunter Hunted. And I don't remember exactly how I did with the Hunter Hunted, but I remember getting up to you, Justin, and you threw a punch, and like my lizard video game brain kicked in. And I did this like flashy duck dodge like I was an anime character. And that's just the only thing that I remember. Obviously, I didn't get it in the show because I wasn't the right person for the show. But I just remembered that when you were telling that Meredith story.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Never forget.
That's about all the time that we have for today. Justin, thank you again for joining us.
My pleasure.
Do you have anything that you want to plug in the two or so minutes that we have left?
Just my website, JVRSTR8, and you can find everything there. Playwriting, and that's basically what I'm doing right now because, you know, pandemic. Yeah. So I'm just going to make some art, and then when we're able to do the art, hopefully we'll do my art. Cool. So, yeah, there.
Do everything we can. Meredith, do you have anything that you want to plug?
I'm still blogging away at meredithraylyons.com/faster.
Yeah, your blog is great. And we had a great discussion one day because of that.
That's true. We did.
It really opened, it really blew my mind. That was really good.
Thanks. Yeah. I love when people text me about my blogs.
So read them.
Yeah.
Yeah, read the blogs.
Yeah. All right. That's about all the time we have for today. This is Opening Stage VGH, the video game history podcast for everyone. Thank you so much for listening. Have a good one. Bye.
Bye. Mwah.